So I'm Jennifer Tolberg for Business, and with me in the studio today is George Bredenberg, who is here to discuss a new initiative launched at Davos in Switzerland earlier this year called the Brain House, which is currently on a global tour. Well, George, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
So this concept of a brain house, where did this come from?
My brain.
Where else?
The idea was, can we bring together in one place at one time those that are focused on brain, the mental health community, the neurodegenerative community, the Alzheimer's, Parkinson's community, philanthropic investors, for-profit investors, WHO, large health systems, all focused on the brain. We have one brain. When we're born, and we have the same brain when we die, and we call the differential impacts on that brain by different names. We call it autism. We call it anxiety, depression, and psychosis. We call it mental health. You know, we call it stress. All of those words are describing some impact on the brain. We said, well, why don't we just try and bring together people to see if there's any commonality? The answer was yes. People said, this is amazing. This gives us a new way to think about how we can work together to generate increased investment in ending brain disorders. And it gives us a new way of thinking about how we can promote the power of the brain during our lives. Education, work training. How can we train the brain to be more creative, empathic, so that what are the tools that we might have now in an age of AI and neuroengineering, where we actually can stimulate the brain to be much more powerful? That is particularly important because of aging demographics in the world. We have fewer people of working age population trying to support a larger global population. We'd better figure out how we can increase the productivity of working age populations in order to keep our material progress going through the century.
So where does this interest come from?
Well, it came from a variety of different sources. It came from the mental health community to say, this is interesting. It came from the community that I serve, which is Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and related dementias. And it came from the investment community who, you know, they know the route by which they can invest in biotech or pharma companies that are focused on Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or mental health or whatever. But the investment community was intrigued by the notion that can we think about solutions to these different siloed brain diseases, which can also stimulate the brain and find new investment theses by which they can invest in brain promotion, brain resilience, brain capital. Regard the brain not as a liability, but as an asset. And so think about this as brain capital. And potentially a brain economy that's much more productive and much more rich with opportunities to train our very plastic brain during the course of our lives to be much more resilient.
Well, can we look at the degenerative diseases? I mean, you are also involved with Alzheimer's. So, you know, what kind of progress is being made there apart from this big research and this big effort you want? Because as you're saying, it's an aging population apart from Africa.
Oh, well, I will talk about Africa in a second. But the answer is I care a lot about Alzheimer's. Three generations of my family, this is clearly a disease that I want cured. But if there are other paths to get there other than the ones that are currently popular, I'm prepared to try to stimulate the investment in these alternatives. But right now, there are encouraging signs. We now have 160-some therapeutic agents, potential medicines, now in clinical trials. We have two approved drugs, although we learned today that, in fact, the Europeans, again, have decided not to approve Lilly's drug called Kisunla. They earlier had declined to approve Eisai and Biogen's drug called Leqembi, but we changed their minds, and they think that they're on a route to approve the Eisai Biogen drug, but they said today they're not ready to approve Lilly's drug. Now, this drug's been approved in the United States and Japan and China and a number of other countries, but the Europeans are taking a fairly, I'll be polite and call it conservative I might be a little more aggressive in calling it paternalistic view on the risk benefit of these new drugs.
There's a big emphasis now on mental health. So is that different from brain health?
It is in the same group. There's no question that during the course of our life, if we eat well, exercise well, sleep well, and take care of our socialization, as it turns out that our interactions with other people are so central to the strength of our brains. If we take care of all those things, that's wellness. It's not supplements per se, but it is, in fact, an aspect of wellness. There are just so many things that affect the brain during your life. And it's one brain, same brain you're born with, you die with. That brain in the first 3 years of life creates billions and billions of neurons and trillions of connections across those neurons, all in the first 3 years of life. You've got the same ones at the end of life as you had at the beginning, but they can be damaged by disease, and they can be damaged by stress. They can be damaged by mental illness. So we want basically to identify the means by which we can encourage the brain to be stronger against mental health and against neurodegenerative diseases.
You wanted to share perspectives on Africa. What were they?
We are launching a Brain Health for Africa program. We had our first task force call yesterday of people, researchers, WHO, CDC Africa, public policy people from Africa, technology people from Africa, from all five regions of Africa, South Africa, English-speaking West Africa, French-speaking West Africa, East Africa, and North Africa, all of them on the phone to sort of say, let us develop a plan, an implementation plan against six priorities by the G20 in South Africa in November. So we want to demonstrate on a continent-wide basis that the feasibility of looking at this disease across the life course and with the incremental GDP that can be generated by looking at this with young people, as well as middle-aged people, as well as old people.
But in Africa, societies are often just coping. They're not thinking of these things of brain health.
And therefore, that's somebody's got to take that on, right? So, I mean, somebody's got to say, this is a real opportunity for Africa to teach the rest of the world how to look at this starting at a very, very young age. Because, yes, we have a large bolus of young people in Africa, but if an Africa is to achieve its destiny by 2050 of being 40% of the world's population, and that basically having the workforce that will supply to the rest of the world, working age people that will support the productivity of the rest of the world, they've got to get at this now. And their Africans really are excited about this notion that they can be the workhorse and the workforce of the 21st century, if they take care of their young people.
So, do you think the whole issue of brain health is looked at differently now? Because there was a stage where people were just shoved away, and you wouldn't even, acknowledge that you're depressed or that something, or that you're neurodiverse. So, do you think there's a changing trend here?
I think there is. Although in the global south, there's still enormous amount of stigma attached to all these diseases, and to the global north, there still is, to some extent, a lot of stigma. That is the first of six priorities that we're doing in Africa, is reducing stigma and enabling the Africans to talk about their brain in a positive way, brain health, not brain disease, not dementia, not mental illness. Those are words that are discouraging, and people don't like to talk about them. But if you talk about brain health, what can I do to foster my brain so I can be a better worker, so I can be a better son, husband, father, then you begin to get people to think about it differently. So I think, particularly in Africa, where the stigma is so high, talking about this as a positive force in your life, brain health is a way to think about it that tries to diminish, if not eliminate, the stigma.
Well, this might be a different discussion, but we always talk about our bodies that is actually not equipped to cope with the diet we're feeding it right now, that we basically haven't evolved that. So what about our brains with what is happening now in AI?
Well, nutrition is going to be of vital importance, by the way, in brain health, as we know the relationship between the microbiome and the brain. So the efforts to actually understand what nutritional elements of our food we should be encouraging and which we should be discouraging is an important component in our life's brain health. And indeed, a mother is her nutritional health is important for the health of her brain health of her kid. AI is a great opportunity to extend the power of our brain, to make us more productive. We have over the years gone through a wide range of new technology, starting with books, which people thought were destructive of the memory capacity of people, right? But now if you just look it up, why do you have to remember anything? So people were afraid that that technology called books were going to damage the brain. They didn't. Computers, they're going to damage the brain. The internet, why would I need any additional stimulus to the brain? I've got the internet. I can just look things up on Google. Well, the answer is these new technologies have always been adapted to extend the reach of our brain, to make us smarter, to make us understand ourselves better, to make us understand the importance of friendships and love and empathy and creativity and imagination. These technologies are powerful stimulants to brain plasticity and to brain health.
So you're taking Brain Health on a worldwide tour, and you talked about Africa now. So what are your next stops?
The next stop is Houston, Texas, to actually talk to the business community, large corporations, about what large corporations ought to be doing within their workforce to encourage greater productivity, to keep their employees motivated, to keep their employees socialized. And there are some leading edge companies that are actually doing things that encourage brain health in companies. So we're bringing those companies together to talk about this issue. Then we'll go to the G7 in Canada in June. Then we'll go to side events at the United Nations General Assembly in September in New York City. And then we'll go to South Africa for the G20 in November. And then we'll go back to Davos in 2026 in January to report out what we've learned during the course of 2025 and what plans we ought to lay to actually change how we as a society encourage brain health.
By Davos 2026, if you look back, if you say we've been successful, what would have happened?
I think we'll have identified the five or six major systems of the world that need to be brought together to encourage brain health. It may be nutrition. It may need a focus on women's health, both maternal health, midlife health for women. Women have more Alzheimer's, as you know, is twice as much for women as for men. So why is that? We haven't really studied that well. So women's health will be a major component of this. Technology will be a major component of this. So there are going to be these large segments of society that are otherwise developing or with women's health not developing, where we need to focus in order to bring about a much more brain capital-oriented, much more brain-positive way of looking at brain health.
George Vredenburg, thank you so much, and good luck with this tour, and let's hope by next year when you report back to Davos, you can say you've made progress.
Well, we will definitely have made progress, and thank you for your coverage of the issue. It's important.